In our nation's increasing racial awareness, we are looking at July 4th differently this year. Yes, it is about celebrating our nation's independence, reflecting on the foundation of America, but it's also about recognizing who wasn't liberated with our country's independence and reflecting on the work that still needs to be done. To that point, Boston and the country have seen tremendous public and social action on race and police brutality over the past more than a month. And behind a lot of that energy and movement in Boston are young women of color. And so we wanted to reflect on the past month of activism and new leadership in that activism. And we invite you to join us in that reflection. Is something different about this moment? Are new activists coming forward, and do they inspire you or move you? What has been your experience? And have you participated in this push for change? Or are you uncomfortable with how far it's gone? We welcome all your thoughts. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So joining us first to have this conversation is Hoden Hashi. She's with the new organization Black Boston, which represents the voices of young people of color. She co-organized a march protesting the death of George Floyd that drew thousands. Hoden, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And Hoden, we're also joined by Vickiana Petit-Home. She's a regional organizer with March for Our Lives and worked with local organizers on an effort to defund the Boston police budget by at least 10%. Welcome to you too, Vickiana.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So let me start by asking both of you to reflect on this past month of activism where you have been young leaders. Do things feel different to you? And Hoden, maybe you can go first.
Yeah, I can definitely touch on that a little bit. Things, they do feel different in a sense, but they also, and I think that a lot of young Black people and young Black women especially can speak to this, they feel very much the same. I feel like the conversations that I personally have been having and the things that I've been doing have been things that I've been talking about and doing for years now. But in a sense, it does feel different because it feels like people are starting to pay more attention, and more people are starting to join in on the movement. So the work has been happening for decades, and for centuries. But in a sense, this moment, is something like we do have a spotlight of attention that I think is a little bit different from what was happening before.
Vickiana, do you agree? How are you reflecting on this last month or so?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that sentiment. I think also, though, I think the sense of unity that Boston is feeling is somewhat different. You know, at the march that Black Boston hosted, and great job, Chihuda, you know, like 26K showed up, you know, during a pandemic. So I feel like Boston has never really been so united. But not only that, I think people aren't so easily tamed by simple rhetoric anymore. They're demanding actual substantial changes, and these politicians are getting flustered, I think. And I think we're really starting to see a new wave of activism, and this is just the beginning for sure.
Hoden, Vickiana just talked about the scale of the march in Boston, the large one that happened on May 31st. It started with an idea you and three other young women had on Twitter. You're very active on Twitter. The march was peaceful. I'm sure our listeners and you remember there was chaos and looting later on in the evening. Did you have a sense of how big that march was going to get? And can you reflect on that day for us?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think that I could have ever in my wildest dreams imagined that many people to come together at a protest that three college-age students organized off of Twitter. The two other organizers, we didn't even know each other before we started this. So it was really one of the most impactful things about that protest was it was really a protest of the people. Like it was organized by the people. It was supported by the people. So speaking to what Vickiana was saying, like this is very much like Boston coming together as a city and kind of deciding that enough is enough. I never thought that something like that could have happened, but it only speaks to how we're feeling in the city. Like we are tired and we are ready for change, and that change starts with the police, but it comes from a lot of different places, and we're ready to start having that conversation.
Listeners, join this conversation. Are you tired? Is there a change in the air? Are you ready to do something different than you've done before to achieve that change? And are you ready for young leaders to take you in that direction? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Vicky Hanna, what is it about this moment that tens of thousands of people will turn out, especially during a pandemic when we know we need to be masked, we need to be socially distanced, when large crowds can threaten one's health and well-being? Why in this moment have people come to the streets in this way?
Well, I can speak to a little bit to like what I and what motivates me and my peers, but it's kind of horrifying, though, that I think, like, this pandemic is, it's opening people's eyes to a lot of the injustices. Some people are just figuring things out, but this isn't just, you know, another event and we snapped. You know, this has been piling up and up and up. And we see the consequences of COVID. Black and brown people are more affected. They're more likely to die from COVID because of underlying health issues. That's a product of our policies and our systems, you know, and the lack of resources we put into communities of color. It's all building up. And so to see that not only are we being killed by these injustices, we're being killed by COVID, but then also, you know, during the midst of all this, another Black person was shot by police. And it just feels like a lot. But it feels like if we don't fight, we're going to die anyway, so we might as well put up the fight. That's how I feel about it. And that's how I felt my peers have felt about it. You know, it kind of just feels like Black and brown people are being surrounded by all sides, you know, being attacked at all sides. And so we can only put up a fight.
Houghton, let me give you a chance to react to that before I go on to another question.
No, I definitely wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that it can be very easy to simplify the message of the movement. It can be very easy to say that it's only about police, or it's only about one man being shot, or it's only about certain things. But I think something that people do need to understand is this movement is about, it's about systems. It's about police, but it's also about the systems that are put in place to protect the police, to protect their image. Mm-hmm. Even going as far as media, we organized a protest with 25,000 people, and we were peaceful. We had masks, we had water, we all supported each other. People had donations coming in, and we were united. And then I got home that night, and all I saw on TV was about the looting, about the violence, and the message is also being changed. So the media plays a role in this. The government plays a role in this. So it's a lot more than just the police. And I don't want that message to be watered down as well. And I think that there's a lot of different entities that need to be held accountable in a time like this.
Houghton, I do want to ask you, is there anything you feel that you could or should have done differently in the way you organized that day that might have led to a different outcome later that night?
I feel like in any situation like this, you can always look back and you'll have things that you would have wanted to do differently. At the end of the day, like, the organizers who did organize this, this is our first time doing anything like this. And again, like, the scale to which it happened was not something that anyone could have predicted. But what I will say is I don't think that there's anything that we as organizers could have done to change the response that we received. I think that no matter what had happened, no matter how we tried to play respectability politics or anything like that, what happened would have happened.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Chris on the line from Nashua, New Hampshire. Chris, go ahead.
Hi. I was just listening to your guest and I was thinking about a conversation I had yesterday with a friend in Mexico who asked me, what's different between these protests and the ones that happened when I was younger in California with Rodney King, for instance? And I remarked to her about how proud I am of these young people for their commitment to nonviolence and to real substantive conversation. It gives me great hope in the midst of all this COVID and all this tension that we really can carve a way forward, because that's how to do it. So I do work in nonviolence, and I just admire the generation that is taking this lead.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for that call. Vickiana, let me give you a chance to react to that.
Yeah. You know, I think young people have always led movements. And I also want to say, like, the same issues that were around back then when you were a child, unfortunately, are still around here today. I think, like, us young people were taking the helm we're trying new strategies, but we're also learning from those protests. We're learning about what they did, and we're replicating some of that. We're also learning from their mistakes. So I think, you know, young people has always led, and they'll continue to lead. And, you know, that generational solidarity is, like, so important to making sure that this work actually is fruitful and that we all achieve our goals, because it's not just going to take us young people, you know. We all need to put our part in this and play our part in this.
Hoden, you and Vickiana are young leaders. Can you tell me what in your life and in your experience growing up in Boston got you to this place and both prepared you and motivated you to do this kind of leadership work?
I think in a lot of ways I kind of fell into work like this. I don't think that it was ever intentional, in the sense of, like I said before, a lot of the things that I do choose to talk about and speak out about are things that I experience on a day-to-day basis. A lot of the times, the daily experience of Black women is politicized. My life and my actions are inherently political to a lot of people, so that puts me in positions where anything that I say or do or experience kind of does get put in this light. So growing up, I did experience quite a bit of racism in the city of Boston. I went to a private school when I was in high school. And so I had to, from a very young age, be able to understand kind of the politics and the history behind why I was being treated the way that I was being treated. And that's something that a lot of people have the privilege to not have to think about at such a young age. But because that was my experience, I very early was able to talk about these things in a way where people started listening, and that's just how I kind of fell into where I am now. It's also just something I'm very passionate about. So it's kind of those two things coming together that have brought me where I am.
Vickiana, I understand you had a different kind of high school experience, but that also shaped you. Can you reflect on how it might have been different than Hoden's and how it brought you to this leadership you're doing now?
Yeah, so I went to Boston Latin Academy as a high schooler, and that's a majority minority school. Like, although racist things still happen there, you know, we have a lot of white administration and all of that. But you know, it was a really great example of what happens when you give Black and Brown students, you know, resources and money and, you know, the possibilities that can come out of it, you know. And that really inspired me. And I got involved in the Mayor's Youth Council around sophomore year. That experience, learning from so many other young people from around the city, constantly meeting and talking about how we see Boston and where we want it to go and where we want it to be, and the values we wanted to enshrine it. And it let me know that, like, even though I was young, like, I was powerful as hell, and that, you know, I kind of already knew, like, my community and what needed to be done, and I didn't have to wait until I was older to start making the changes that I wanted to make. through that, I got involved through several different organizations, such as March for Our Lives, working on gun violence prevention. But the one thing that always, like, stuck down was just, like, this racial equity lens, how all these issues, you know, they affect all of us. But at the end of the day, like, race plays such a huge factor into our lives. So thinking about and centering Black and brown folks in my advocacy and in my organizing, that just always became core to what I did.
So let me ask you both, what do you want from the city of Boston for change now? Hoden, what are you trying to change now?
There's a lot. I think that change, before we even get to change, I feel like change, one, starts with acknowledgement. And like true acknowledgement in the sense of, like, I feel like it's been a month since the protest that we organized, and to this day, we have not necessarily been acknowledged. I don't feel like we've gotten a genuine acknowledgement from the mayor and from a lot of other city officials, in the sense of not just saying, hey, we hear you, but showing it and committing yourself to actually listening to what we have to say. And then from there, a lot of organizers in the city that have been doing work far longer than we have do have very specific demands, whether that's with the police, whether that's with, like, the budget. And we're here to support them and the demands that they have.
And Vickiana, the budget has been passed by the city now. Mm-hmm. You were pushing for, you know, a 10% reduction. What is next for you?
Yeah, you know, like, the mayor declared racism to be a public health emergency, and then he continued not to do what it took mm-hmm. to actually address the issue. He proposed a $12 million cut, which was equivalent to 2% of the overall budget, of the PPD budget, you know. And all the counselors, they always mentioned how they've gotten so many letters and emails and calls about this issue, way more than ever before, and yet, you know, 8 out of 5, 8 voted to keep the budget as is, and only 5 really listened to us and listened to our demands, you know.
So you, like, have more work to do there.
Yeah, we need them to actually do the work that they're trying to say that they're doing and listen to us. But it's also about these structures, you know, like the fact that we're now getting people involved in the budgeting process, that's not okay. You know, it shouldn't take a moment like this for people to pay attention. This budget is our money. It funds our schools. It funds our communities. We should have more direct access to that. We should have more direct communication with our counselors about that. We should be at the center of it. You know, it should be more transparent. It shouldn't be this one-off case that people are looking at them, you know? It's our money.
And that's Vickiana Petitholm. She's a regional organizer with March for Our Lives. Vickiana, thanks for the time today.
Thank you.
And Hoden Hashi, she's with Black Boston, which represents the voices of young people of color in the city. Hoden, thanks to you too.
Thank you for having me.